This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Amy Ridenour, president of the National Center for Public Policy Research. She is the co-author of a soon-to-be-published book, Shattered Lives, 100 Victims of Government Healthcare. And with all the speculation about what the current Democratic healthcare plan would do to this country, Amy and her co-author have pointed out that we can tell by looking at other countries that have gone down the government-run healthcare route. And Amy, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
What is the purpose of the book? What are you focusing on here?
What we want to do is tell the stories of the people who live in government medicine countries. The fact is that here in the United States, we hear the stories about our complaints. We hear that Medicare is bankrupt. We hear if a Medicare patient can't find a doctor. We hear if somebody can't get Medicaid. But what we don't hear about are the problems that people face in socialized medicine countries, because that's in their newspapers. So what we wanted to do was to bring the news from abroad to tell the American people that for all the problems we have, and we have some, we don't have it anything near as bad as people elsewhere.
Well, the president, however, says that we aren't headed down that road. Is it inevitable that we will get to the point where these countries are, or can it be actually contained that the government option does not swallow up the whole healthcare system?
It's going to depend on the American people. If the American people fight government takeover of medicine, then we will win. If we take our eye off the ball, if we let the politicians decide, then we'll get it. Because the natural thing for a politician to do is to try to put power in the government. The natural thing for the public to do is to try to hold on to it. So it's a fight to the finish. But boy, I'm going to place my trust in the American people.
Well, let's talk about some of the examples in this book, and there are 100, of course, as the title suggests, but let's just talk about a couple. We hear so much about how good the Canadian healthcare system is, but I've spoken with a woman from Canada who had a brain tumor and had to get treatment here because of the long wait there. You focus on one that ended up, I believe, going to Buffalo to get some treatment, correct?
Yes, we have several stories in the book of people who fled to the United States from Canada to get treatment, and if they had not done so, it's almost certain they would have died. Just to give you a statistic, Greg, in the United States, a single hospital is likely to have more MRI machines than an entire province of Canada. Now, that means if you've got a brain tumor and they need to find out what kind it is, cancer or not cancer, something that's hardly incidental to your future, you can be put on a waiting list for months in Canada. We have a story in the book about a 4-year-old boy who was put on a 2-year waiting list to find out if he had cancer. 2 years. Well, they took care of that, but, you know, that's a human rights problem. That's just not a medical problem.
And then they dismiss certain complaints. I know from your press release that there was a man who was suffering from stomach pain and thought he might have something more serious wrong, which it turns out he did. And his healthcare system basically told him to stop complaining.
Exactly. We have many stories of systems saying, stop complaining, it's all in your head. But in this particular case, 42-year-old man has several children, has bad stomach pain. 50 times he goes to the doctor in Great Britain. 50 times they tell him they can't find anything, but they do not give him a cancer test. Turns out he had colon cancer. He goes to visit Sri Lanka. That's a third world country. Goes to the doctor there. They find out he has cancer, but at that time, it's fatal.
And, Amy, in terms of the rationing argument, obviously, you talked about how one American hospital could have more machines than an entire Canadian province. How does the rationing process get going?
Well, it's really fairly simple. You have almost a collision. You make health care, quote unquote, free, so more people want it. At the same time, in order to pay for it, the price keeps going up because so many more people want it, so the government says, okay, we're going to pay the doctors less, we'll pay the hospitals less, we'll buy less equipment, so the supply of health care contracts, at which point you have the collision between increased demand and reduced supply, which results in waiting lists, rationing, and pain, fear, misery, and death.
But there's still a political agenda involved here, too. In the example I saw, they'll deny important life-saving drugs, but elective surgery, if it fits a political agenda, I guess they'll cover it.
Well, yes, absolutely. A case in the book, we have a lady who had cancer, needed a drug to survive. The cost of that drug was approximately the same as a tattoo removal for a man slash woman, who a man who was becoming a woman, and he had been a sailor and gotten tattoos. When he decided to be a lady, he thought he didn't look nice in a sleeveless dress, so he wanted the government health system to take off his tattoo. They took off the tattoo, but they did not give the woman with cancer her cancer drugs.
And they covered the sex change operation as well.
Yes, and that, of course, is extremely pricey.
Mm-hmm. In terms of these examples, we've heard these examples. We even have leading healthcare officials in Canada and Britain saying our system is collapsing. America, don't do this. Why do you believe there's such a determined effort to go down this road when the results are known?
Part of it is a desire by politicians to control everything and to be saying that they have solutions. You know, a politician who fixes Medicare, for instance, would probably get no attention. A politician who takes over the entire healthcare system and ruins it will be in all the papers. Well, what do you suppose a politician's going to choose? An occasional politician will just go to fix Medicare, but most of them, they ran for office for the attention. They're going to go to get the attention route. So that's part of it. But another part of it is the natural tendency of governments to grow. There isn't a country in the world where this hasn't been the case, and we are no exception. That's why the American people have to stand up and say, no, we can't stop this. We can fix the problems we have. We can do better. And we have to remember one more thing. Once you have a government-controlled system, people are vested in it. Everything from the corporations that are selling things to the government to, the, in Britain's case, 1.4 million people who work for the NHS who become voters. It becomes extremely difficult to get out of it once you've got it. So we absolutely cannot get started.
Amy, just a couple of questions before we let you go. First of all, there may be some who say, well, you've told these horror stories. What's a better solution to our healthcare system? What do you think is the smart way, at least in a bullet point fashion, to progress here?
In a bullet point fashion, one thing we need to do is to let insurance companies, or force insurance companies even, to sell across state lines. That means that if one health insurance company is offering a cheap price in North Carolina and you live in California, you can actually buy that. Right now, we don't have that kind of competition, which forces prices up. Second thing we need to do is to have a voucher system to help people who can't afford health care. And I would put Medicare people on it, too, so they have a choice of health care plans that actually work. Because a lot of people don't know this, including Medicare patients. But right now, they can actually be denied procedures that people in private systems can get. This has actually killed people in Medicare here, too. So we need to have the senior citizens have options, which we would support by helping them pay for their premiums. And another thing that we absolutely need to do is to stop connecting our healthcare system with our employment system. People lose healthcare because they lose their job or they quit. And then if they've got a condition that they may have developed a year before, then they have trouble getting insurance because their life has changed. We need to totally stop the idea that every time you get a new job, you get a new health insurance company.
Another thing that you just mentioned is Medicare. Even though it's about to go completely bankrupt, it's already in the red by hundreds of billions. There is a impression out there that this is the model, that it's somehow a proof that a government-managed system would work for the general population.
Well, it is the model because a lot of these politicians, particularly the ones on the left, deny that Medicare has problems. But several of the overseas countries, the ones that are in this book with bad problems, Japan is an example. They have a system very much like Medicare, where the doctors and the hospitals are private, but you have to buy the policy, and you have to be in Medicare effectively once you're 65. You pay the premiums, and then the government pays the doctors. And then what the government does is not pay them the market rate, so you have a shortage. We have a story in our book of a poor elderly man in Japan hit by a car. 14 hospitals turned him down. You know, he's there on the sidewalk, and the ambulance people are calling hospitals to find a place to take him. None of them would. They were too full. He died.
Last question before we let you go here, Amy, and that's that the president and his allies have accused critics of this legislation of using scare tactics, and his standard line is, what's really scary is allowing the status quo to continue and to not reform the system. As you have studied these other countries, and while many people who are opposed to the Obama plan do want reform, as we've already outlined, what's more frightening, this vision for reform that the Democrats are laying out or the status quo?
The vision for quote-unquote reform that the Democrats have for us is far more frightening. It's a comparison between a cut on your finger, which is the problem we have now, to having your head lopped off.
That's about as succinct as we can put it. Amy, very troubling, very disturbing, but also extremely important and informative. Again, the book is Shattered Lives, 100 Victims of Government Healthcare. We should point out the book is free. And if you want to access it through the PDF version, head to the Radio America blog. That's dateline.radioamerica.org. Amy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Amy Ridenour, president of the National Center for Public Policy Research. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.